Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey, Crimes of the Centuries listeners, we are launching a brand new podcast at the Obsessed Network today called Murder and Alliance. In the podcast, investigative journalist Maggie Freeling reinvestigates the 1999 murder of Yvonne Lane. Though her ex-boyfriend David Thorne was convicted of the murder, evidence points to his innocence. Now, 20 years later, Maggie travels to my backyard in Ohio to talk with people involved in the case, explore new leads, and try to identify what really happened to Yvonne. You guys, this is really going to be an interesting case. I've been helping edit on this podcast, and Maggie is doing some fantastic work. So we've got the first episode right here, and there are two more full episodes of Murder and Alliance already available right now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's date is July 14th, 1999, Wednesday. It's 1309 hours. My name is Detective Bud Sampson. We're in the Ravenna Police Department interview room. Along with me is Detective William Mucklow and Detective John Leach of the Alliance Police Department. Also in the room is Joseph Isaac Wilkes.
Okay, we're investigating the homicide of Yvonne Lane. Can you tell us your part in this?
The tape you're listening to is Joe Wilkes, a 19-year-old boy confessing to murder.
She was like, hey, what are you doing here? She goes, I haven't seen you in a long time. I was like, oh, David just wanted me to stop by and see how things were. And then we were sitting there talking for about 3 to 5 minutes, and then I did it.
Okay. I know this is going to be hard, but we got to go through, and you tell me what happened here. Where were you sitting? Were you sitting upstairs or downstairs?
We were on the second floor, not the third one.
Okay.
And we were sitting on the couch talking, and I reached over and grabbed her hand. Come back.
Okay, did she get up and try to run?
No, she tried to run out the door.
What door did she try to run out?
The big glass door to the slides. And then she...
Go ahead, take it easy.
But she was me blind, and I told her David wanted me to. But she fell on the floor, and the walls were on fire. That's what I know.
This is Murder and Alliance, an active investigation into who killed Yvonne Lane. I'm Maggie Freeling. On April 1st, 1999, 26-year-old Yvonne Lane was found with her throat slashed, dead in her home in Alliance, Ohio.
26-year-old Yvonne Lane, a beautiful, vivacious woman, found in a pool of her own blood, her throat slashed while her children slept.
She was discovered by her mother, who had arrived to take her 6-year-old grandchild to kindergarten. Yvonne was a mother to 5 kids. David Thorne was the father of one of the children, although he and Yvonne were not together anymore.
The murder of a mother of 5 in her own home stunned the small town of Alliance, Ohio.
David had recently been ordered to pay child support. And in his confession, Joe said that he was hired by David Thorne to kill Yvonne so he didn't have to pay.
The father of one of the children. The motive? child support, Thorne was ordered to pay.
To the untrained listener, this seems like a pretty clear-cut case. Someone confessing and a good motive. But when you start digging and talking to people and going through documents, the more complicated things get. And it seems like everyone around Yvonne had a motive to kill her. I first came across the case on the website Injustice Anywhere, which has since become a staple for my research into lesser-known wrongful conviction cases for my other podcast, Unjust and Unsolved. I covered an episode a week telling the stories of people who I believed were wrongfully convicted. David was one of them. One of the incredible things to me about David's case is that it actually wasn't unknown. There had been other media coverage before.
The attack grabbed headlines as police hunted for a killer.
Dwayne Pullman, who you just heard in the previous clips, is an investigative journalist who looked into the case for 3 years. And at the center of his investigation,
a very serious question. Did the system convict the wrong man?
However, that was over a decade ago, and there's been no movement since. I said in David's episode of Unjust and Unsolved that this case deserves its own long-form investigation, not just 20 minutes or 40 minutes. So here we are. Since Yvonne's murder, David has continually and persistently said he had no involvement. He says he never paid Joe Wilkes or anyone to murder his ex-girlfriend. David was on the homepage of Injustice Anywhere as one of their endorsed cases. So I clicked it. And I could not believe what I was seeing. When you make it to David's official website, wcodt.org, you discover first that this was an incredibly brutal murder.
She begins to spurt blood. Pumping blood violently out of her neck.
Yvonne's throat was slit to the spine. She was almost decapitated. Blood was all over the house. The living room where her body was found looks like someone took buckets and buckets of blood and threw it around the room. It just didn't look like a hit or a random murder to me. This looked personal. Police had to process this absolute mess of a room, which I'm sure was not easy, especially because they also had to get four of her kids out of the house, because all but one of her children were home when she was murdered. So some flubs may be understandable in the investigation, but not to the extent that happened here. Police say they covered Yvonne's body with a blanket pulled from her bedroom, potentially contaminating any evidence on her body. No one wore shoe coverings or gloves to preserve evidence. Investigators went back and forth, stepping over Yvonne's body when crossing the room, potentially contaminating the crime scene. And one bloody footprint between her legs is caught in photographs coming from a detective. The chief of the department even brought his date into the crime scene. It was an absolute disaster. Evidence was collected from the scene and allegedly never tested. And yet, the case still made it to trial thanks to Joe's confession. At trial, the prosecutor said that David hired Joe to kill Yvonne. And as you heard, Joe agreed. He said David gave him $300 to kill her. After his confession, Joe took the police to the alleged murder weapon, a 3.1-inch pocket knife, and where he said he disposed of his pants in the woods. Rose Moore, the state's other star witness, also said she saw Joe the night of the murder, and he told her that he was on his way to kill someone. That's pretty damning. But it's worth noting that there was no evidence linking Joe to the scene, much less David. The entire case rested on witness testimony. But some witnesses were never even called, like a neighbor who saw a man leaving Yvonne's house in the morning after her murder, who said that the man was not David, or Joe.
I was not asked to testify in the trial of David Thorne. I was shown a photo of David Thorne in December of 2000. It was not the man I saw leaving the residence in 916 Mile. I was shown a photo of Joseph Wilkes, the confessed murderer, in December of 2000. It was not the man I saw leaving the residence in 916 Mile Street. Either one of those three that she showed you was it at all.
But the jury never heard this. However, after deliberation, David was convicted on January 25th, 2000, of hiring Joe to kill Yvonne. He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Joe took a plea deal of 30 to life for his cooperation.
It didn't take a jury long to convict David Thorne. Wilkes pleaded guilty. Both are now serving life sentences.
But was Joe lying? And if he was, why? He lost almost as much as David did. Evidence uncovered in later investigations could point to another killer, like any one of the other men who fathered Yvonne's other four kids, or even members of law enforcement Yvonne was rumored to be sleeping with, or the creepy neighbor that would spy on Yvonne through her window.
This case is filled with sex, secrets, and surprises.
As Duane Pullman just said, this case is a roller coaster, and things only got more complicated when I talked to David.
All right, you there?
Yep. You hear me?
I can hear you. It's a little loud, but that's fine.
Okay.
So how are you doing today?
Not too bad.
When I first spoke to David, he had done 21 years, almost half of his life in prison, and there seemed to be no hope left.
Pretty much dead in the water. We need new evidence.
David didn't have a lawyer anymore. He ran out of money in all of his first appeals. And like any wrongful conviction case, he needs a lawyer and an investigator to find new evidence if he has any chance of getting out.
That's why we've been pushing so hard, is to find a private investigator that would kind of go ahead and kind of almost start the case anew.
And that's proven difficult to find. After talking to David and reviewing case files, I had enough questions about his conviction that I couldn't let it go. And I haven't even done a super deep dive yet. I covered his case in a 40-minute episode, basically just on the documents that I was given. And I just kept thinking, there really needs to be an in-depth investigation. How is this not a feature documentary? There is so much to get into, so much scandal and intrigue, things I wasn't even able to broach in those 40 minutes that shook me to my core. After David's episode came out, I stewed on it for months. It haunted me. Who did the witness see leaving Yvonne's house in the morning? What happened to the evidence collected at the scene? There was a knife with a fingerprint, condoms and wrappers, blood smears everywhere. Was any of it tested? And if so, it must not have matched David and Joe. Otherwise, it reasonably would have been presented in court and the prosecution would have had a slam dunk. So who did it match? Could Joe have been involved, but not David? I kept stewing. Anytime TV producers would reach out about Unjust and Unsolved, I would talk about David. I would talk about it to everyone. I even reached out to producers and podcasters on my own, looking for anyone who wanted to deep dive into this murder case. It consumed me for months as I tried to figure out any way to help David. And then an opportunity arose. In October, I flew down to Austin, Texas for Wrongful Conviction Day, a day that raises awareness about wrongful convictions. I was meeting with Jason Baldwin from the West Memphis Three.
West Memphis, Arkansas, 1994.
They were convicted of murdering three Boy Scouts, hogtied and left in a ditch.
A satanic cult, a demonic ritual, fueling the town's bloodlust with descriptions of sexual torture and mutilation.
Today, the West Memphis Three walked free.
We did a Facebook Live together.
Oh, and then people could see comments.
Yeah,
okay.
I couldn't really tell.
Okay. Hello, everyone. We are live. I am here, Maggie Freeling, in Austin, and I am with Jason Baldwin of the West Memphis 3, who was convicted in 1994 and released in 2011. He is also the
Jason now has his own organization helping to free the wrongfully convicted.
What makes you want to continue doing this work literally immediately upon getting out?
Well, yeah, you know, I've always been a volunteer, a person who helps other people. And so to experience wrongful conviction as an innocent person and have that experience and then to get out because people cared enough to fight for my freedom, almost felt like a duty I had to repay that.
Jason co-founded Proclaim Justice with his friend and private investigator, John Harden.
Should I keep chewing while you're recording?
After the Facebook Live, I got to work with Jason and John on a few cases they were investigating that I plan to cover for season one.
Yeah, that works. Let me go get a laptop.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you need documents?
Yeah, I may need some notes. Okay.
Like, wow, you were very, have it all together.
We went over Nikki Zinger and Daniel Risher's case.
In the span of a month, a murderer took her mother away, and then the state took her love away.
Diamantina Salinas Calahaco and Andreas Mascaro.
There's only two possibilities here. There's only two. Either somebody is feeding him all of those details, or he was there. That's it. Those are the only two possibilities.
And DeMarco Wilson.
There should be no gunshot residue. Well, we have gunshot residue on the victim's jacket. So how do you get gunshot residue when you're shooting from that far?
We went through files and they talked me through the details of their investigation into each case. It was surreal. Not only to be in Austin on wrongful conviction day with Jason Baldwin, but to sit down with John, to see the work they are doing to help free people who are wrongfully incarcerated, and the passion that they have doing it. And the days in Austin weren't just work. John and Jason are genuinely cool people, and I got to know them during an after-work drink or four.
My brothers, Matt and Terry, like had me and my mom stand back to back with our, so we could see who was taller on my 16th birthday. And they're like, oh, mom, Jason's almost as tall as you now, you know, and, you know, just having that family time. And then got arrested, you know, a couple months later.
Every day of that trip, as I got to know them better, I kept thinking, are these the guys that David has been waiting for? Is there an appropriate time to bring up this case to them? I didn't want to be that person who unsolicitedly asked these busy and in-demand guys with a wait list of cases to look at another case like some personal favor. But this wasn't just a favor. It was someone's life, a man who has spent over 20 years in prison and believes there is no hope left for him. And I was determined to get him help. One evening, we were having after-work drinks, and I was feeling good and broached the topic. You know, there's this really crazy case I'm looking into. You guys might be interested. We talked a little, and I told them that the most heartbreaking part is it's been almost 22 years, and he said his case is dead in the water. They seemed interested, but I didn't want to push it. Maybe they were just being nice to their out-of-town guest. I planted the seed and went about our evening, but I would revisit. I left Austin and went back to New York and stayed in touch about the cases I was working on that they gave me.
All right. Well, I got to run. Can you send me the overview of
yes.
the witnesses?
Yeah, I sure will.
Awesome. Thank you, John. I'll talk to you
all
soon.
All right.
Talk all right.
Bye.
I don't know when or how, but at some point I must have said to John, look, I think you guys really should look at the files. Bold. But I wanted to know if he would see what I saw. A total mess of an investigation and potential to help someone who may be wrongfully incarcerated. I don't know why, but he agreed. Maybe because they really had nothing to lose. An incredibly generous listener of Unjust and Unsolved felt so compelled by David's story, she offered to fund their investigation. So I sent over the thousands of pages of case file documents and then waited for them to have a moment in their busy days working dozens of other cases to review David's file. And by December, they did.
There's Maggie.
Miss America.
Hello.
What's up?
Hi.
John brought on another private investigator from Proclaim Justice to help, Danny Waxler.
Oh, it's sunny. It's sunny down there.
It's downright spicy out there.
Wow.
Y'all come down. Y'all come on.
Danny has been an investigator for decades, and he's like a hawk on a case. We all got on a Zoom call together, including David from prison and his wife, Sue, so John and Danny could let us know what they were thinking.
There's Sue. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
From the jump, it seemed like they were into it and definitely up for the challenge that I think over the years, other investigators and lawyers found too complicated. Even if there were forensics that could be tested, it still wouldn't exonerate David. By all accounts, David was not at the crime scene. It was an alleged murder for hire. So freeing David would be difficult. It would come down to proving that Joe was also not there.
The more we can dismantle Joseph for Joe, whatever he goes by, the stronger plight we have in freeing
exactly.
David.
If Joe didn't commit the murder, then the prosecution's whole case falls apart against David. But Joe said he did it. And that is hard to get past. Over the years, Joe has given multiple statements about what happened. His story constantly changes, and we'll get more into this later. In one story, David hires him to kill Yvonne. In another, he shows up there to invite her to a hotel party he was having, and she's already dead. And in 2001, just a year after his conviction, he even recanted his hitman for hire confession and said he was pressured by police and coached what to say to implicate David.
Scared and confused, Wilkes says this former detective, John Leach, forced him to confess. Wilkes was a friend of David Thorne's.
And they had told me a general story about how to put David in it.
Maggie, did you reach out to Joe?
I did not, because I just didn't want to really tamper with anything. I did not reach out to him.
I didn't reach out to Joe because I didn't want to engage in any kind of perceived witness tampering, because in my mind, this case wasn't dead in the water. It was going to go back to court, and I didn't want to mess anything up. And I'm glad I didn't, because it seems like Joe is really the key to cracking the entire story.
You know, I'd like David to tell us, if he was our newest investigator, how would he approach this? It's always good to hear from our clients on what their own thoughts are, how they would proceed with about what we're about to launch ourselves into.
I mean, the thing that comes to the forefront of mine is Joe's timeline.
Different accounts and witnesses put Joe at multiple places at once. So which version of the story is true? We will definitely get in depth into Joe's timeline later. But based on a preliminary look at the case, John and Danny wanted to know more. They didn't officially agree to take David's case, but they were ready to go to Ohio and start digging to see what they found. Then they decide if the case was worth pursuing. As for me, I made another bold move and suggested that I help as well as document the investigation and cover it for a new podcast solely focused on reinvestigating the murder of Yvonne Lane. Again, for whatever reason, they agreed. And we were all going to hit the ground in Ohio.
Okay. Well, we'll stay in touch as needed. And as things come into focus as far as what we want to get accomplished there and time frame and all that stuff. But we will plan on being there 2 weeks from today.
Cool, guys.
Okay. We'll regroup and be back in touch.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys. Good to see you.
You too.
2 weeks, we'd be in Alliance, Ohio, starting the investigation into Yvonne's murder from scratch. Exactly what David said he needed to move his case forward. What would we find? There were so many questions as Danny and John poured through the case files trying to find out where to start.
So in the first statement that he gave that we have any record, did he say that it was a lock blade knife that he used to kill her?
They sent me a recording of their discussion, a chunk of which I'm sharing here, because I want you to hear how they approached the case, what stood out to them right away. I find it fascinating. You can hear how they're skeptical. They're not focused on clearing David. Really, they're focused on finding the truth.
You know, I'll say that we take, you know, in taking this case, I think one of the first things we always have to do is say, what do we believe was the most significant part of what convicted our client?
Yeah, yeah.
And we know, just even if it's just preliminary research, we know it was the statement of Joseph Wilkes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's not like there's an abundance, there's no biological evidence.
You know, right off the bat, a couple of things that raise my eyebrows are the knife in the pants. How did Joe lead them to the, what were the circumstances? Was it confirmed to be the murder weapon with any kind of forensic or biological testing or anything like that? And if it was the murder weapon and Joe did lead them there, then that's a big fucking deal. You know, just on its face, that's one that I'm gonna have to have a satisfactory answer to. How did Joe take them to that knife? That's a hell of a thing right there. That's one of those coincidences that I don't like.
I've thought about that. You know, what if, let's just say Joe did this.
Yeah.
Because there are things that make you say, well, the pants, the knife, he had familiarity. Why is he staying at a freaking hotel in town that night?
Yeah.
Why is there documented a receipt to confirm that?
Yeah. Joe's got some explaining to do. I mean, it's not cut and dry that he's lying. There's some real questions that I'm going to have to get some satisfactory answers to. I mean, these are all good questions, and we're just going to have to see where it all takes us.
And we did. We left for Ohio 2 weeks later to start to figure out, is David innocent? And if so, who did kill Avon Lane? Coming up on Murder and Alliance.
We're investigating the homicide of Avon Lane.
She actually cheated on him a couple of times.
In terms of the police force, my God, I had 8 or 9 names of officers who were potential sexual partners.
She said she was murdered, and I mean, you could have just knocked me over.
Any number of people could have been a suspect.
He was seen by a neighbor standing at her front door at 5:30, and the time of death is 7.
He said that they put him in a room and they chained him to the wall by his arm and spit on him, and they told him that they wanted him to confess.
The guy I knew that came into the post office that threw up his hand and waved and grinned all the time, and he's just the nicest guy ever. I thought, no, this can't be.
Brett Turvey, a nationally known criminal forensics expert, picked apart what he calls a botched case.
I said, I'm curious. Why does she know so many cops? You never asked about that or wondered about it?
The officers were involved in nefarious activity, criminal activity.
The fact that it was never turned over to the defense is shocking.
The police controlled the narrative. I cannot get to the truth.
Did you know who he identified?
No, I don't.
It was a police officer.
It's like, no, something's missing here. And why didn't the prosecution turn this over? And what is going on here? So it makes me feel like there's more to the story.
And although you thought that the evidence proved it, I know in my heart and soul I did not do this.
Y'all, if you like this show, please consider joining the Unjust and Unsolved Patreon. It shows how much you care and helps us continue to tell these stories. Plus, you get some awesome bonus episodes, Q&As, and events as a thank you. And please, please rate and review. The more reviews, the more attention, and the more likely we're going to get tips and leads, and the right ears will be reached. Murder in Alliance is produced and reported by me, Maggie Freeling, with editorial consulting from Amber Hunt. Aaron Case is our legal intern, and Bob Mallory is our engineering assistant. For more information and resources, go to murderinalliance.com. You can find Murder and Alliance on Twitter and Instagram at @murder_alliance and join the discussion on Facebook at Unjust and Unsolved Podcast Discussion Group. Murder and Alliance is a production of the Obsessed Network. You can find all their shows at obsessednetwork.com.
Thanks for checking out the first episode of Murder and Alliance. There are two more available to listen to right now, and episodes will drop every Thursday morning. Go find Murder and Alliance wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.